The other thing I wanted to ask you about was the poster that was presented here on bevacizumab and trastuzumab. Can you talk about the background of that and what they actually showed here?
So bevacizumab is a drug that's now approved for colorectal cancer and I believe for lung cancer. And the role in breast cancer has been emerging over time. In the metastatic setting, the trial from ECOG 2100 suggested that adding bevacizumab improved outcomes with paclitaxel. So now more and more we are thinking of adding Avastin, bevacizumab, to our treatment programs for metastatic breast cancer. The trial ECOG 2100 was a randomization to chemotherapy alone or chemotherapy plus bevacizumab. And because of the nature of patient treatment patterns, it ended up being a study of HER2-negative breast cancer because patients who had HER2-positive disease were thought to need trastuzumab, not bevacizumab, in a trial. So we actually have surprisingly little data for bevacizumab in HER2-positive breast cancer. Now, a priori, there is no reason to think that bevacizumab would work in HER2-negative breast cancer and not in HER2-positive breast cancer. Again, this was just an artifact of the way that ECOG 2100 in particular accrued patients. So that was a part of the motivation for the work that was done. And the other part was an interest just to see if it would be safe and effective to pair these two humanized monoclonal antibodies with one another, trastuzumab and bevacizumab. Mark Pegram at UCLA has been running a phase 1-2 trial. About a year and a half ago, he showed the phase 1 data from something on the order of a dozen patients, just showing that there did not seem to be pharmacokinetic interactions between bevacizumab and trastuzumab. And he followed up on this by showing the very preliminary results from a study that is still accruing patients, an open-label phase 2 trial where women who have HER2-positive breast cancer, who are chemotherapy naive in the metastatic setting, are given trastuzumab plus bevacizumab. And the study continues to accrue. In many respects, for that reason, the data were presented somewhat prematurely. But of the 37 patients who were assessable, according to the study investigators, the response rate was quite dramatic. It was actually 54%, I believe. That's very interesting because it suggests that a non-chemotherapy regimen with potent biological agents could have substantial activity. Obviously, one concern would be the potential safety of such a regimen. And there, for the most part, it looks pretty feasible. There was one case of symptomatic heart failure amongst these 37 patients. It's not clear if that's just an artifact of single-agent trastuzumab, which can rarely give you congestive heart failure, or if there's some other signal. Again, something in the order of another dozen patients had asymptomatic changes in LVEF of unclear significance. And so, you know, we're still sorting those things out. That gives you a roughly 35% of women who had asymptomatic changes in LVEF of some kind or another, which is a high number. It's a number that was certainly higher than we saw in the ACTH treatment arm, for instance, in the adjuvant setting. And so in the metastatic setting, we'll have to figure out if that really has long-term consequences or not. So what this does is several things. First, it suggests that you can pair these drugs safely together. Second, it invites a lot of ongoing research, which is going to begin to pair chemotherapy with trastuzumab and bevacizumab to see if that's really a better way of taking care of HER2-positive disease. And it may also generate a lot of interest in adjuvant trials. So one suspects that the next generation of adjuvant trials from some of the cooperative groups will be something on the structure of chemotherapy plus trastuzumab plus or minus bevacizumab to look critically at bevacizumab in the HER2-positive population, just as the ECOG study 5103 is going to look at bevacizumab in the HER2-negative patient population.
And I know the NSABP and Dr. Slayman have been talking about that as a possible follow-up trial, and they were looking forward to this presentation of the data. Do you think there's enough data available right now to move forward with something like that? The idea was they could kind of do a safety-type analysis as the trial was going on.
I think the data are certainly provocative. What we don't have is whether by throwing chemo into the mix, you change those safety parameters. And I'm sure that studies are probably being developed, if not active, to look at that as well.